Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel is always joined by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Got a busy show ahead of us. We have the earnings parade. Of course, we're going to talk about as many of those as we can. Mattel and Hasbro, Expedia, to name a few. We're going to talk about the washout in Grubhub, the comeback in the EA, buyback in Sony, and two guests on today's docket. First up at 8:15, a new guest we have found. His name is George Slezak. He's the his site is stockindextiming.com. He actually knew Joel from back in the day in the pits. So we're going to talk about what life was like back then in the pits on the floor in the 80s. And then at 8:35, we'll be joined Nick Shaheen, options expert, our favorite options expert, the writer and creator of Create Income with OptionSpreads.com. Joel, what is the word here in the overnight trading session?
Oh, we got some pressure on the S&Ps. The bulls on the close are getting plowed. We closed at 2704. The high tick right there, 2703 1/4. Your pre-market low stands at 87 even. Folks, we'll be focusing on Thursday's low of 85.50. After that, look out, we got a little 10-point slide to the 6-day low of 75.75. We have crude in the red here by 28 cents. Big beating yesterday, top of the trading range now, coming near the $52 area, the bottom of the trading range. Gold holding support just above 1,300, up 340 at 1,317.60. And silver up almost a dime at 15.805. Triple D, is your luck coming back? Is that crystal ball? Is that trading karma helping you out?
Well, we'll find out when we get to the open, but it looks like the last couple of days, a little bit of the luck's coming back. I'm having some of the random news work my way. And we know a lot of times when you have an overnight positions and you get 30 or 40 on news all the time, randomly hitting your stocks. I mean, not about the scheduled ones, but just randomly hitting. And you got to work out of those as best you can. You work out of your losers the best you can. You try to maximize the winners as best you can when you have random news against you or random news for you. So in this case, I'll be trying to get some of the random news that is for me this morning, trying to work for me. I'll be trying to maximize those gains as much as I can too. You know, and that's where the trading skills, 20 years of trading skills, just tries to come in. Sometimes you still don't do as great as you could, but today it looks like it's going to be one of those days. I happen to be short a lot of semiconductor stocks overnight, so obviously the semis are really getting hit hard here this morning. A little bit to do with that they've run the most. Also, Goldman had a little bit of a negative note out on a lot of the semis there too, so you're seeing some weakness there, but you're seeing weakness across the board here, Joel, and we got a 2-day sell-off, so again, yeah. 2-day move. I was leaning to the short side. I was correct in that assumption there and getting rewarded here for it this morning. So here you have a tape that's been going straight up. You get an ugly day. A lot of times the next morning you get follow through. Caution to the short seller though, because a lot of times we know these things can turn between 9:45 and 10 o'clock. So if you are, you know, coming here and selling now and, you know, getting scared, you're selling 50 handles below where we were 2 days ago.
Yep.
So I think buy the dippers are going to start to look here sometime soon, because I don't think, you know, this is the start of something bigger. I think it is just going to be a healthy pullback. Start to get under 2,600. That's where you'd start to get concerned again. That's a long ways down from here, 80 handles down from here. So what are your thoughts on today's market sell-off?
I mean, I'm a little bit more longer term bearish than you are. We had a big rebound.
No, you don't say.
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry.
His bear hat on.
No, I know it just returned with a double close on Tuesday and Wednesday at 2731. Right. You know, maybe we should never have been at 2900. Maybe we shouldn't have been at 2300. I don't know. I just feel like 2500, 2550, 2600 is fair value in this market. Not a great earnings season. No deal in China. Europe's falling apart. Fed doesn't know what they're doing.
Things were on the table, though, back the entire rally in January, though. Europe never really recovered. I mean, let's even look, you know, some of the bigger banks. Yeah, they rallied a bit in January, but you know, we're right back down here in the gutter. Europe is going to continue to be a problem. It was one of the major concerns they were citing for the sell-off in December. They completely forgot about it in January. They haven't fixed themselves. We talked about this on the show yesterday morning, you know, concerns over European growth were the catalyst to kickstart us here. Those concerns are more here this morning because you got a lot of European stocks getting hit here once again. So I just think all these concerns were still on the table. People just forgot about them. It's all about sentiment. I don't feel like they're as nervous as they were in December about a lot of these things. And the other, you know, the trump card for the market, and it's not a trump card, I'm not using Trump, is the Fed. I mean, they know that the Fed is going to defend this market no matter what. And if, you know, the market starts to go into a slide, the Fed gets more dovish. They say they're data dependent, but they're not data dependent. They're market dependent. And we know in that big sell-off in December, they got dovish. And that's why we started a rally. The Fed's got the markets back. So it's hard to really get a big bear case going here. When you know the Fed's going to, if the market starts to rally, okay, yeah, Fed will get maybe a little more hawkish, maybe. But, you know, it's the same thing. They say they're data dependent, but they're not. Everybody can tell. They're market dependent. They got dovish. And because they got scared and they saw the markets falling as hard as they were, and they're like, we better cool it a bit. What I believe.
Yeah. And what did Bill Santiago say? You know, it's like the Fed has your back. You know, they're spiking the punch bowl. And that's what I'm saying.
Well, they've been spiking the punch bowl for 20 years with easy money. So, you know, and especially spiking the punch bowl, obviously, since the financial crisis back in 2008. So, yeah, they took a little bit of the spike out of the punch bowl there. In the last little while, but now, you know, they're ready to re-spike it. They bought a Mickey and it's ready to go in there if there's any problem and the market knows it. So, I mean, I can't get my full bear hat going on. I'm actually looking, I've said I'm underinvested. I'm probably going to nibble in to some of the stocks they've been beating up. And just, you know, for a case here, you know, the buy the dippers are still out there. Don't kid yourself. Look at Grubhub yesterday.
Oh my God. Look,
that's the craziest move I think I've ever seen on earnings. Grubhub at one time opened, so it reported earnings. It goes down $10 on the earnings, flushes out another $5 in the first opening 10 minutes. We know there's no liquidity in the opening 10 minutes, especially on the stock reports earnings. Then proceeds to rally in the next 20 minutes, 10 points. Consolidates for a bit, then rallies another 7 points, almost gets the entire losses back. So from a disaster of like six, you know, of down being down 20% to back to green in one day.
That's great. Spencer, please go to the daily on this one, because if you were playing this off the hop, what level would you lean on here? If you were just caught in this crazy action and you were short, what level, Triple D, would you be looking at to potentially cover as short?
Well, get down to the 66.64, the low of the move.
Yeah, and then look at the low.
We didn't even take it out.
We took it out by 2 pennies.
2 cents. So we made sure we got down there to hit those couple of stops. There was one person sitting there with their stop. We got to make sure we get them too. You know what? The levels work. You know, Joel taught me this back in 1999. Just to go to your dailies and look at those major levels. Remember, you used to always give us a sheet with all the S&P levels on it. You sometimes would do some of the major components in the S&P as well. You'd hand that out to all the traders. Joel would do this every morning in the Detroit Bright Trading Office. He'd have his sheet. And he'd have them all written out with all the major supports. He'd star all the levels. And we all the traders use the different levels. And, you know, it's just another tool in our toolbox. But
exactly.
I'll tell you, it's simple analysis. Like, you're just going and you're picking the points. But it takes some time to go and pick those intermediate points there, too. I mean, anybody can go and look at the low of the move and say, okay, that was it. But there's intermediate points there, too. But amazingly, a lot of times these lows work. And that's where it bounced. It bounced right back to it. And got all the losses back. That's just what day. That's incredible. And you know what? Look at EA Sports. Everybody hating on EA Sports. You know, just in the stock, it's, you know, the beats, it was down at $74 after hours that night. Never got there. Open 78. Don't call it a comeback, but it's now trading the 84 handle here. So you're looking at a stock that has now recovered 2/3 of its losses from a disastrous earnings report. So in 2 days. We were saying, I don't know, maybe on the buy the dip. I was like, I don't know. It's a pretty bad report. Well, you know what? Recovered anyways. Take Two has not recovered here yet, but it didn't make a new low yesterday. So it's, you know, obviously come back a little bit as well. Activision Blizzard still remains in the gutter because they're due to report. Everybody's scared what they're going to say. But, I mean, come on. This is crazy. These comebacks are crazy.
Yeah,
are the algorithms just, what is this? Like, when you see a move like the Grubhub, GRUB, and it's down 20%. And then you look at it 4 hours later and it's flat. These are incredible moves.
Yeah, I mean, if you were quick enough to catch that, look at your daily, put your order out. I mean, to cover short, I mean, it would have been hard to go long there just because with momentum. But, you know, using your levels for different, I mean, to cover short, I mean, if you had that order out there, I mean, it blinked 62 and then it was just right back up. But Dennis wanted to point that out from yesterday. Good technical levels in that one. Just real quick, I only want to spend 30 seconds on this Bezos news. Spencer, can you just recap it for our audience?
Sure. Yeah. Jeff Bezos wrote a blog post last night in which he outlined how he has been being blackmailed by the parent company of the National Enquirer. Apparently blackmailing the richest man, or I don't know what he is now, one of the richest men in the world is not the best idea.
Okay. Dennis, you don't have any take on this. I just have a take. It's not reflective of Benzinga. It's not reflective of Dennis. It's just my opinion on Amazon, a stock I never trade, never had in my portfolio. I mean, this whole thing to me is like the tipping point. I would not want to own the company. There's other things going on. It's an all-time high. What's he's specific- distracted.
No,
he's
no,
distracted
no, no.
Now.
He's specifically not. If you read the thing, his post, he said, you know, they're doing this investigation. This is about his personal life, of course. And he told the guy, he said, listen, you have unlimited funds. Do whatever you want. But right. Don't come back to me until you have something. I don't want to know. My time is valuable. I don't want to know everything you're doing. Just.
I mean, we know he's going through a messy divorce.
Spend what you have to spend. But his time is valuable because he's running two companies. He's running Amazon. He's running the space company Blue Origin. He's got whatever it's called. He's got two companies to run. That's not easy.
I'm not saying it's not easy. It's just to me, when certain things happen within the company, within politics and opinions and gossip gets involved, to me, it takes a lot off the stock. You can go out and own it and buy it and think it's going back to 2000. I'm just looking, it's just my opinion that this is going to continue to put pressure on the company.
Right.
And that,
I have no reason. I don't like the technicals in Amazon. That's okay. What I'll say is this looks like it's ready to fall off a cliff. So I don't know if this is Bezos stuff is going to be the catalyst to knock it off the cliff, but I will tell you, you start significantly getting below 1590. There is a lot of air below here. And Amazon is one that, you know, it obviously got hit on its earnings report. It didn't really recover at all like some of the other ones did. It recovered part of it. But it's right back down here below the lows of the move. So the only thing I'd be concerned is you have a candle there. Go back to the candle on the 7th when you on the 4th,
yep.
4th of January when you ran from 1518 to 1594 in one day. It's all air below here. You don't have nothing in the 1500 handle. So if you're coming here buying at 1586, there's a lot of air below you. Can it bounce back? Sure. Things can happen. Market bounces back, you know, and obviously Amazon's going to go with it. But I just think this is not looking as healthy. There's other charts that look healthier than Amazon.
All
right,
yeah.
I'd rather go somewhere else with my money right now, not worrying about National Enquirer stuff and whether it's got picture of him, his body parts, or whatever they've got on.
Well, let's go somewhere else with our show then. It is 8:14, and we have a new guest coming on, George Slezak. As I mentioned at the top of the show, he's known Joel from their days back in the pits together. His site is stockindextiming.com, and we'll be right back in a moment here with George. All right, welcome back, everyone. We are now joined on Pre-Market Prep by George Slezak, stockindextiming.com. He's known Joel from way back in the day, and I'm going to put a picture up of that. Supposedly, Joel is in this picture. I'm not really sure if you can see him. But George, how's it going today, and what's going on in this picture here?
Yeah, this is the S&P pit at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange back in 1983. And this is me right here in the right-hand corner.
Is that the one that they put on the cover of was it Business Week or Fortune magazine when they showed the pit? Because I know they did another overhead one, but I'm actually under this monitor here to the left. But George was a trader starting on the floor in 1978. He traded futures for more than 20 years, and I remember him yelling and screaming in that pit. But we got limited time here, George, so let's rip through your slides here, and okay. We'll take it from there. Talk a little bit about the market.
Okay, great. Yeah, this next slide, this is the S&P pit. Back in the day, in the middle of the 80s, when we had 500 guys in the pit, it was a wild time. I'm right around here, if you can see that guy. Right? Or that's Nick Del Negro. That's me right here. But anyhow, let's see. In 87, I called the stock market crash. Okay, I was in the S&P pit for the crash. And from the day of the top, okay, from the day of the top right here, each day I published this chart and handed out 100 copies on the trading floor. Okay, there's guys all over the world that have a copy of this comparison. And the day of the crash in 87 was 55 and 56 calendar days, just as it was after the day of the top, just as it was in 1929. The crash was 55 and 56 calendar days after the day of the top. It's kind of neat to be able to say I called it, but oh well.
Okay. All right. Now let's move on to the next one.
Okay. Yeah, Timer Digest has been tracking me for a long time. And for the 10-year period just ending 2018, I'm the number one market timer for the last 10 years. Fari, also one of your guests, is the number one guy for 3 years, 5 years, and 8 years. He's coming up on me.
He's moving up on you, I know. And you and Fari are buddies, too. I can't wait to get to both of you on the show one time.
I used to be number one all the way across, but Fari is faster than I am. I don't change as much as he does. So for 8 years, he's up 248%. I'm only up 185, so in 2 years, he'll pass me.
Okay. Let's move on to your next slide here, Talking Markets with George Slezak of Timer's Digest.
Yeah, it tracked by Timer's Digest. I just put this on to explain that my approach to market timing is I look at the market as being either overvalued or undervalued, and then use technical indicators to trade in the direction of that market view. Okay, I started out publishing the Commitment of Traders report each week, each month, back in the 90s. And the Commitment of Traders report, using the net commercial position for the stock index futures, gives me important value areas of the stock market. The green areas are saying buy here when the net commercial position is a low, short, or even long. And it says sell here when the net commercial position is high. Okay, here's a low, here's here, and here. In 2018, we have the two tops, and we have very heavy net commercial selling. So we have heavy portfolio hedging. In order to back up my Commitment of Traders view of market valuation, I use fundamental indicators as well. And one of my favorite ones is price to peak earnings. Okay, and this takes the ratio of the peak earnings for the given cycle and compares it to market price. Okay, and 2018 is the second most overvalued market condition in 150 years, 140 years market history. Okay, and we have 1929, 2007, 87, 66, and 1906. And following each of these overvalued market conditions, we've had at least 2 year bear markets. Okay, and when I look at the market, this chart on the left has the global Dow with its all-time high on January 28th of 2018. The New York Stock Exchange had its all-time high in January of 2018. The S&P did a higher high in September, and the NASDAQ did a higher high in September. But when I look at the overall market valuation, considering that the Commitment of Traders was well overvalued in January of 2018 as well, I think the real market high, the real bear market began in January of 2018. And here's the global Dow. And I'm comparing this to the 29 to 32 pattern, okay? And we've had the same similar correction bounce and a down leg. And if this pattern is right, this decline we're in now, I mean now for the next 4 or 5 weeks, should go back down and retest the December lows, okay? The 1919 stock market top pattern is a pattern that shows how, I have friends that are Elliott waivers, and I say, oh, no, we only have an ABC count here, and we're going to do a five leg up. Okay, well, Elliott wave is an average. Okay, here is an actual market pattern, 1919, where with a similar bounce, it came all the way down and took out the lows. And I think that's what we're probably going to do.
Okay, all right.
I have a question about that, George. So we're going to take out the lows
In what index is it, or in the overall market here, or what are we talking about here?
Yeah, NASDAQ, S&P, Russell, New York Stock Exchange.
Okay. Okay. So do you have a target for us as far as when that could happen and how low we can get?
Well, you know, the low on the S&P, what was it, 2350 back in December?
2316.50 basis the March contract.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I mean, I think we could be there in 3 weeks.
Okay. All right.
If this 1916 chart were to play out, okay, you know, these are months. Here's February, and here's March, April, and if it plays out, you know, that this is by the end of February, March, boom, right there.
How often do you adjust your signals? Do you use daily, weekly, monthly charts? How often, like, what do you need? What do you compile your information? How do you come up with these determinations?
I have a model that I use that forecasts the market. And that model tends to show market turns every month or every 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever. Okay. And my goal would be to sell here, buy here, sell here, buy here, and sell here. You know, that would be my goal. So over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, I might have 5 signals.
Okay.
And I was very bearish. So this, my buy down here would probably go to neutral, not buy, and then wait for the bounce to happen and then go back to a sell, because I'm long-term bearish. And I'm going to, if we were to actually get down here and bounce here, okay, I would go neutral here. Okay. And then resell here, because if we actually take out the December lows, we're in a downtrend, and I don't want to be long for the bounces. I'm going to try to go to neutral for the bounces and stay short for the decline. Now, I have an important low at the end of the year. On my forecast model, I have a bounce for 3 or 4 months, and then I have a much bigger low at the end of 2020.
What low is that, though?
Pardon me?
What's that low? What's that target?
I would have to go back to the price to peak earnings ratio. Okay. And to try to show you guys what I'm talking about. Okay. Let me see if I can get this to go back up.
What about the Fed put, George? I mean, a lot of people, I mean, I know you're looking at fundamentals and you're looking at technicals. A lot of people talk about the Fed put and that coming into play, that they'll never let the market get to like these depressed levels. Do you have any take on that?
Why would they ever have let it go to depressed levels before? I mean, the Fed put let me go back here for a moment. Okay. Based on 150 years of market history, the market is cheap when it gets down around 10 times earnings.
Okay.
Currently, the S&P earnings are $140, $138, $139. Okay. You want my target for the end of 2020? It would be 10 times peak earnings of $140. So that would be $1,400.
Okay. All right. And how are you mentioned that you don't really trade individual stocks. You try to use the indexes. Why do you try and stay away from individual stocks?
Well, when I was on the trading floor, I was also on the Chicago Board of Options Exchange. And I learned the hard way that you just don't go short individual stocks, okay? Because if you're short a stock, along comes a company buyout, a merger, whatever. You know, if you're in a drug stock and they put out a new drug, the crazy things happen on the upside to individual securities. So on the downside, going short, it's just kind of hard to do in individual stocks. It's much easier to trade a bear market with the indexes, okay? So I mean, I'm right now. You know, I spend my time focusing on the indexes and looking for places to go short the S&P. Yes.
Hey, George, Dennis Dick. I just want to take you back to your 1400 target. So I'm just trying to figure out 10 times earnings. What's going to be the catalyst to drive us down to, you know, a 10 PE again, where the market is so nervous that they want to only pay 10 times for earnings? What would be the catalyst, you think, to take us, you know, to that type of a projection?
Well, now that's 10 times peak earnings. This is peak. Okay. So
10 times peak earnings. Yeah. So yeah. 10 times the
well, you know, for example, Boeing. Okay. If you look at the third quarter financial report for Boeing, it had negative stockholders' equity. Okay. That they have repurchased so many shares, over $50 billion of stock, that they've depleted their stockholders' equity completely. Okay. Right now, Boeing in the end of the year report had 400 million dollars in stockholders' equity on $100 billion in sales. If we go into recession, and I think many, if you see on Ned Davis thinks it's 90% likely that we're going to go into a global recession. Okay. And by the way, the U.S. great economy will fall apart if the rest of the world falls apart. Okay. But if we go into recession, Boeing earnings are going to disappear and they have no stockholders' equity to absorb deficits, to absorb losses. And if they have a loss, they have $50 billion of long-term debt, they're going to be bankrupt. Okay, and if Boeing is bankrupt, if Home Depot is in the same situation, there's the top 50 stocks in the S&P are in the same situation, we're going to have stocks going like Boeing, an incredibly great profitable stock, going bankrupt because they've depleted their capital structure.
I got one more, George, before we let you run here. So you think we are going into a recession here, correct?
Well, Ned Davis says there's a 90% chance we're going into recession, yes.
And
I agree with him.
Over this year and next, beginning this year, but potentially next year as well. Is that what you're saying? Just to be clear.
Yeah. You know, let's see. He Ned Davis has. Where did he have it? I don't have it handy. I had his slide, but yeah. No. I just believe in Ned Davis, and he's right.
All right, George. Well, we got your take on the market here, and we got the technicals, and we know you're longer term positions, and you adjust your numbers on the monthly basis. So we'll check in with you again real soon. We'll get Faria on. Maybe you guys can have a little debate. But I appreciate your time and your charts and your input on the markets, and we'll see what happens. Thanks a lot, George. We'll talk to you soon.
Short-term decline into the end of February, bounce for a month or two.
We got it. Okay.
All right.
S&P futures trading down 1275 here, 1250, 26.91.50. I'm looking at mid-range on the session, 26.95 and a quarter. So that would be your first target. Boy, we're getting some people that agree with Mr. Czak. We get some other people that disagree, but that's what the show is about. Dennis, we're coming in to 8:30. What do you see about imbalances?
Well, I know nothing about Boeing going bankrupt, and I don't know about that, so I'll just leave those cards. Obviously, I don't think that's the case at all, and stocks at all-time highs been an unbelievable performer, but so I'm still a fan of Boeing. Anyways, let's move on to we've got a lot of imbalances here to the sell side. Not big, though. But they are to the south side. And we are bouncing a little bit in the overall market, too. But I'm seeing Pfizer, 109,000 to sell. I'm seeing Alibaba, 48,000 to sell. You know, Baba just quietly here. And, you know, just, you know, this has been a pretty significant two-day sell-off here. Baba 2 days ago was $173. We're 164 bid here right now, 164.70. So quietly just lost 9 points. So that's the one thing. And I'm going to say, you know, about chasing in, you know, And I don't know why Cramer, if they've just got, you know, Cramer used to be a little bit of a contrarian. And he's just, they're chasing so much now. Everybody, it seems like on CNBC, is just talking momentum and chasing and chasing. And he's recommending Baba 2 days ago. And I'm like, I sold my Baba. I've sold half of it a couple days ago because I just think it's overdone. I mean, and he was never like that. Cramer was always crunching the numbers and figuring stuff out. And now it seems like he's just recommending stocks that are going up and not recommending stocks that are going down or recommending to sell them. I mean, I don't know if it's the producers, you know, forcing that or not. Because I don't think it's Jim Cramer sometimes, you know, just chasing the market around here now. I feel like Cramer, I don't know. And that's just a little tangent I went on because it rubbed me the wrong way. That, you know, Alibaba was down at 130, 140. And you know, he did say it was a favorite of the Chinese stocks, but he wouldn't buy any. Went straight up and now we're going to recommend them. I mean, don't chase guys in the long term. You get second chances here. And sometimes, you know, maybe there's reason to chase in day trading, but I still feel like long-term investing, wait for your chance. And, you know, maybe Alibaba gives you a chance down here at 160. Okay. Well, now you're starting to, yeah, well, it's, your trend traders will say, oh, the trend's broken, but we got the long-term investing hat in here now. And when, you know, I've got my long-term investing hat on, I'm looking for weakness to buy if I like the company. You know, I'm not so much analyzing, oh, the trend's broken, so now it's going back down. I mean, market timing is very difficult. We just had a market timer on who does very well. Fari does with it too. But long-term, market timing is very difficult. Mark Chaikin, great point yesterday on the show. saying how difficult it is to market time. And he called me, you know, he wasn't calling me, but I did exactly what he was saying. I was very good at calling the top, but I didn't get back in. Even though I called the 1,000 Dow point rally before it happened, I still didn't get back in. So it's difficult to, you know, trade your long-term portfolio. So identify good companies that you want to own for the long term. Alibaba is one of them for me. And obviously, you know, get and look at, you know, the opportunities on the weakness to buy it. So that's what it's all about in the long-term investing. From a day trading perspective and from a swing trading perspective, it is all about momentum still too. I just feel like, you know, mad money is supposed to be for the long term there. That's why I don't know why they always got you buying the stocks on the higher end. Cramer's great. He knows so much about stuff. He never used to do stuff like that, but everything's about momentum right now and getting immediately gratification, which you kind of do in the Momo plays. But when they turn, you can really, you know, look at your, and they're like, holy cow, I bought near the top.
Okay. All right. We got 833 here. I just saw the S&Ps have not had a three-day losing streak in 2019. So that's over a month. So we'll see. We need to get back up over 2704. That was your close, I guess. I mean, I don't know if they're using the Dow or the S&P or what they're using as the indicator, but three down days in a row. We'll see if we can avoid that. Let's get one report in here, Dennis. What one do you want?
Well, I guess Expedia was wild.
Okay,
let's see that. And it's still trading up, but this has been very wild after hours. So you can expect it to be wild during the regular session too. Let's go check it out.
All right, Expedia Q4 EPS $1.24 versus $1.08 estimate. Very nice beat. There, sales $2.56 versus $2.54 billion. So beats on the top and bottom line of the Q4 for Expedia, and their gross bookings were up 13% on a year-over-year basis.
So Expedia on the initial numbers rallied. Then they puked it. Like, look at this after-hours chart. They puked it all the way down and was trading down at 123. Then they obviously said something on the conference call, and then they blasted it off into orbit. And it took off 20 points from like 124 area up to 144. It has settled back down to come back to 136, but crazy trading action. Obviously, booking moving around with the BKNG, and then also TripAdvisor, TRIP. Those are your peer sympathy plays, but holy cow, was that a wild action after the report.
Oh, yeah. The high and the low, I mean, those are parameters that you can look at. I don't think we're going to see either 123.22, and then you had a pop all the way up to 144.98. I think if I was going to get down and dirty in this one, I would just wait for this long consolidation here. Since right after the news break, you've traded in a range. It's a big range, albeit from 136, let's call it 137.5, 138. I would play how it broke out of that range. But buyers and sellers are squaring up here. 835, Spencer, we got one more quick guest to get in, correct?
Yep, and I'm ringing him in right now. Nick Shaheen, it's been too long since
we spoke. It's been too long without Nick.
Create Income with Option Spreads and SellSpreads.com are his two sites. I hope he answers. It is Friday. We normally talk to him on Tuesday, so it's not in our routine. I hope he –
Morning.
Hey, Nick, you're here. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, good. We were just saying it's been too long since we spoke. We don't even know what has happened since the last time we spoke. It's been that long in the market. But walk us through these past few days. What have they been like for you? We've been talking a lot about this buy the dip market.
It was pretty good, actually. We got lucky. I've been doing some iron condors, and it's been pretty fruitful. Given that we don't have these violent moves that are too big, the price action is unfolding as the option markets have been expecting it. So the idea of writing a risk on the top and the bottom to try to range trade the action is to figure out where the options actually have priced in the action before you can sell the risk. Otherwise, you're just throwing darts in the dark, so, and hoping it sticks.
Something like, I always want to take you to a few examples here. And do you ever, you know, you're writing, you know, credit put spreads and stuff. Do you ever do the straddles and write the straddles too when you think the premium is just ridiculous? I'm taking this GoPro, for instance. Mm-hmm. And the GoPro premium and apparently was almost $1 into the earnings report. And we're looking at where it's trading now, and it's basically trading almost flat to where it was coming in. I mean, these straddle buyers got absolutely murdered on this.
Right, but I am not brave enough to sell a straddle in a GoPro. What if they come out with a, you know, some crazy headline?
A new product. Not a one-trick pony anymore.
What if they become, and I quote, the new YouTube killer again?
Yeah. At 90. You don't like the small little ones like that, where they could move 20% in your face and write the straddle.
I just don't like the short stocks. I would rather act on the downside, sell downside risk into something I believe in, rather than to try to short something that I don't know much about. I don't have an edge shorting a GoPro. And when you sell a straddle, you're shorting it and going long it. And the problem with shorting a stock is my losses are unlimited to the upside. So I would rather have a finite amount I know I could lose if it goes to zero than to know that I'd have
to. This is why you don't write credit call spreads, right?
I don't on specific stocks. I do write them, and that's why I'm saying it's been good, because I sold a lot of credit call spreads when prices came into this level, because I knew it was a ledge. And if I didn't turn on the news, I expect selling to be in this area because there's overhead supply. So if you've, I don't know, let's take Apple, for example, and if you look at the stock, it came back into a ledge from which it fell apart not too long ago. So if you were trapped there, and price comes back to you, you say, thank you, let me get out with my money almost even. So it just creates congestion. So if they fought it out at a ledge, they're gonna, on the way down, they're going to fight it out on the way up. It's a pivot point. So I expect a stall. And, you know, of course, CNBC jumps on the bandwagon. Oh, my God, we're going back to revisit. One red tick yesterday. You know, we have one red open and already talking about revisiting the lows. Not that we can't. Yeah. It's just not the right thing to do. They are fear mongers, and I wish they would just go off the air.
I don't think we're there at all. I don't think, you know, I think the way that it recovered in January absolutely shocked me to see the bounce that it did. But that means to me that there's a lot of people who are caught short here, and it's not going to be easy sailing on the way down to the lows. I think there's people who are expecting, or people who sold out. And I sold out some of my long-term stuff even, you know, just nervous back in the rally in mid-January, because I was like, okay, I'm going to lighten some stuff up here because I don't think we're going to get it all back. We got it all back. So there's people like me that a little bit more cash in their long-term portfolio thinking, I want to get back in here too. So I think you've got you get anywhere near 2,600 even on the S&P. I think you're going to have buyers all over the place. So I think to think about 2,300 is way premature here. I don't see, you know, the problems that they were highlighting in December are still the same problems that they have here today, but the sentiment towards those problems has completely changed. So I think I'm apt to buy the dip here, even today.
What were you saying yesterday about the earnings season, Dennis?
The earnings season has not been great, but look at the response to those earnings. It's been incredible. So you've seen companies come out like Apple, and it's like, nah, it's not that great. But you know what they wrote? Facebook, those weren't that great earnings. But the sentiment was just bad towards these companies. They were hungry for stocks. I mean, if they were reporting good earnings,
I'll like give you an example. Earnings, turn off the news. Really turn off the news. You would be a better trader. I guarantee you that. So Facebook, everybody's afraid going into – this is the one time where I actually risked money on Facebook into the earnings because of a conversation I had with a friend of mine. He advertises. And he used to use Google, and he spent a lot of money on Google and completely ditched Google and went to Facebook.
Why? This is
good. Because it's working for him. I said, what about this, you know, this data privacy? So he confirmed what I thought. We have, 200 million US users maybe on Facebook. The billion is not here. I went overseas during the period of time where they were having the Analytica issues. Nobody knew anything about it. Nobody cared. You've got a billion users that don't care. Okay, so the advertisers are mostly here, but the users are not. So if the advertisers are targeting the users, they're not targeting just the US. So this guy now spends gobs of money on Facebook because they have a system to advertise that works for him. And he told it to me in big picture. I was like, wow, this is pretty impressive. I'm going long. Rarely do I risk some money long into an earnings. And I was cautious Google, wrongly so, because you know they didn't collapse, but I bought some small put bite on Google, and just because of the opposite. Okay, so if Facebook is doing well advertising, if Amazon's doing well advertising, who are they taking it from? So, you know, that was my thought there. So turn off the news, do your own homework, and trade valuations and the charts. That's all you need. The headlines from CNBC, for example, are just ridiculous, absolutely comical and almost like criminal.
We get one day down. Like what you're saying, one day and everybody's talking like, oh, this is the start of, you know, December all over again. We went for one day.
We didn't even have a day. It was pre-open yesterday when they started talking about it. They brought an expert.
They were talking it before, even at the
They brought an expert. I forget her name. Seems like a nice person. She was absolutely stating that this is it. This is, we have big cell signals like we've had in October. What? You know,
on what exactly? I look at these technicals. I don't see us in a downtrend here. I see us in a V. It's a full V. Maybe we're going to be wrong, Nick. Maybe this thing is going to go back down to the lows, but I don't think it's going straight there. There's going to be a lot of people looking to buy a hell of a lot earlier than those lows.
So black swans will get us there. We even have, let's say, gray swans. I don't know what you're going to call it. Like if we get to 25%.
How often do we get a black swan?
We do have a couple of gray swans going around here. The biggest of which is the March deadline with the 25%. My feeling is they're going to kick the can as far as implementing the extra. But if the China talks completely fall apart and we go to 25 with no end in sight, I can see that creating panic. But even then, it would be short.
That's a gray swan. That's not a black swan.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Didn't I say gray swan?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Agreeing with you, buddy.
Oh, okay.
Wait, Nick, I have a question. Speaking of, you know, how we sort of tend to get into our bubbles, and the Facebook report was a good example of that, right? Of all the bad news Facebook had, of all the crappy headlines they had last year, they crushed it in their last report. Something we should have brought up yesterday, and I meant to, and I didn't, but it got mentioned in our chat, was Twitter. In their report yesterday, for the first time, released their daily active users for the quarter, which is, of course, not the only metric that matters, but it is one of the metrics that matter. And their daily active users for Q4 were lower than Snapchat's. Twitter has less daily active users than Snapchat does. Put that into perspective for us.
Okay, so Twitter, I've always been, I love the platform. I use it for all of my news. I hope they never go away because then I'll have to watch the news again. So this way I don't watch
it. You're such a hater, Nick.
What?
You're such a hater on the news.
Because it's all, they don't report news anymore. They tell me what they think of what happened. I don't want that. I just want the headline and let me interpret it however it is.
All right, so Twitter.
So Twitter is perfect for that. It suits my needs, you know. Tons of people read the news. That's great. For me, I just rather know the fact and let me deal with it. So I don't think they do well on making money. Their platform is pretty busy. People are making money off of them and they don't make money. So if Wall Street Journal puts a post in there and I click on it, almost always I have to watch an ad video on their platform, the other guys, the account tweeting. So Twitter is not getting any action of that. They should. So charge some sort of pay-per-click. So if you tweet and you take me to a landing page that's going to get an account, Twitter should get a piece of that. That's how Google makes its money, pay-per-click. So they should go to that, and then their bottom line will blow up. So their PE is not that crazy. I think it's in the mid-teens, maybe 14, something like that. From that perspective, it's doing okay. I'm glad they're going away from reporting the daily active users because that's not what matters. Same concept as Apple going away from reporting unit sales of iPhones. Who cares? If they're making a great P&L, do you care where it's coming from? I don't.
That's true.
So, it's, you know, people said, oh my gosh, Apple stopped reporting. It's going to be disastrous. That saved them this quarter. This quarter, Apple would have cratered if they reported the iPhone sale units. But overall, they're doing better because they're getting money from somewhere else. So they can now miss on the iPhone a little bit, make it up somewhere else, and nobody cares. Same with Twitter.
Nick, we got to stop before we let you go. People want to take a look at CMG here. So Now, Nick, you're gonna do your unbiased opinion here. It had a big move yesterday. Now, I know if I was long, what I'd be doing, but a lot of times you see a gap up and go, a consolidation, and then a move higher. Here, we only have one candle activity. What are you looking to see if we're gonna have, you know, consolidation and another move over 600, or make some room and go back down and fill the gap?
Sure. I posted 640 target if they go above a neckline to my peeps. I said, you know, I'd be betting down just because they are so expensive. They're more expensive from a PE basis on Chipotle, right? We're talking.
Yeah.
So from a PE basis, it's I don't get it. It's a restaurant.
And I've never got it.
They're well, when they were growing fast, fine, but 100 PE for a restaurant is just insanity, in my opinion. You can buy five apples for that. And
you see these Mexican fast food places popping up all over the place. I mean, was it Cuervo or how's that one?
There's Qdoba.
Qdoba. Yeah, there's like so many of these things now. They all taste the same.
So
Chipotle, I've ate Chipotle, Qdoba. There's no, I don't even notice a difference at all.
So from a technical perspective, forgetting what it's worth, if I'm looking at the chart and I don't know what that company is, $603 was a pivotal ledge from 4 years. Go back to October of 2015, you would see that as a floor in June to go to their high of 750. They came back to it and then fell apart and never recovered. And here they are almost at it this time around. So see what happens above it. So if I haven't bought it, I definitely want to see what happens when it hits that ledge again. So if you were stuck from back then in the stock, what are you going to do here? You're going to stick it or are you going to say, thank the Lord, I'm out?
I think that we've been on the line with Nick Shaheen. He's the author of Create Income with Option Spreads. Usually joins us on Tuesdays, but we got him Friday this week. Great information as always, Nick, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Can't wait for it.
All right. S&Ps are climbing back here. We're only down 11 handles here at 26.93 even. Mid-range on the session is going to be my first target on the upside here, 26.95 and a quarter. And we'll see if we can even go green on the session. I think you'll find resistance here at the close at 27.04. You know, Fridays are good days in the markets for, you know, weekly highs and weekly lows. So we'll see. We'll see if Thursday's low can hold up. But underneath that current low of 26.80.75, my next target on that would be your 6-day low at 26.75 and three quarters. We've done a lot of talking, haven't covered a lot of earnings stocks or ratings changes.
Do this Mattel Hasbro together.
That's where I want to go. That's where I want to go. I want to go Mattel Hasbro. Let's do it. Mattel reporting yesterday. Hasbro was, I believe, this morning. Mattel Q4 EPS $4 versus a four cent EPS versus a 15-cent loss estimate. Sales of $1.52 versus $1.44 billion. So big beats for Mattel on the Q4 EPS and sales. And then Hasbro going the other way here this morning. Q4 EPS, $1.33 versus $1.69. Sales of $1.39 versus $1.53 billion. So misses for Hasbro on both the EPS and sales in the Q4. And they're going opposite ways.
Mattel, that's their first earnings beat in 3 years. Those guys notoriously miss earnings. That's what was reported by Bloomberg, so I think that's right.
Okay.
First earnings beat in 3 years. First time they beat
that
earnings.
That is correct.
Everybody
since Q2 2016.
Let's buy the hell out of Mattel. Barbie is back. They made 4 cents. Oh, yeah.
Q2 2016 was their last beat.
20% short interest in this thing. You're squeezing the hell out of the shorts. This is a classic short squeeze. Wait for the turn, but I think this is just another selling opportunity in a stock that's in a long-term decline. So I'm not going to go in here and short it right here this morning. If I was long it, I'd be thanking the stars that, you know, that they had an okay quarter. By all means, making 4 cents is not this, you know, Barbie's back, you know, and that's what you're going to read in the headlines from the media because they want to justify a 17% upside move. But I'm justifying with the short interest. You know, maybe it got a little bit, you know, overdone when it got down to $9 here and now it's come back. But I'm not a fan of Mattel at all. This is a stock that I think is a sell.
Pre-market. I mean, the chart doesn't look good. Making money for the first time, to see if they can repeat it again. Maybe it's a new trend. It's hard to predict. 1495 was your pre-market high. So I would look, if you're looking for this baby just to run and keep on running here, give it a 15 handle, 15 and a half, 16. If not, I might be leaning a little bit more towards here with Dennis for a fade here. The top of yesterday's range is still $2 away. Yesterday's high at 1245. And we got Hasbro going in opposite direction here. How was that report?
Wait.
Well, Spencer already gave
the numbers. I gave the Hasbro. So Hasbro, the other way, they missed on both.
Okay. By the dippers, reign supreme here. Boom. Pre-market low.
They're already out there.
Okay, pre-market low here is
$80. This trade 80?
80.17.
$80 is trade down to. Wow. And that's when you're going to come and start to get near the lows from December. They're out there. When these things start getting near the December lows, they're just hungry for stocks and they buy them. I mean, there's, we've saw, you know, and I'm regretting not, you know, adding to my EA position, because EA has all of a sudden got 2/3 of the losses back in 2 days. These things just happen, man. I cannot believe the comebacks in some of these stocks. Even Grubhub goes down, kisses the lows from January. Put 20 stars besides all the lows from December 24th or December 26th. Because when the stocks come back to those points, almost all of them are bouncing. They're bouncing incredibly. We didn't even get close on Hasbro, but we did get near it with EA in the after-hour session. EA did trade it down to the 74 handle. The low of the move was 73.91. And if you're just buying near those December lows, 3 days later, you're already up over 10% on that EA in 3 days. Grubhub, it took 3 hours to get up over 10% of that. So, I mean, if I'm short stocks, I'm buying everything near those lows, even on, and it maybe it depends on the company too. I mean, if it's a really bad company, you know, maybe it's different. But, I mean, it seems like in the majority of cases here, these things challenge those lows from December in an individual stock basis, and they are bouncing, and they are bouncing hard.
And just think about it, though, when, you know, a stock, it takes that long to go up that far. And if you were shorting it any other point, I mean, you got to think about this besides like trying along. If you'd been shorting this Hasbro and since that December low or January low and just getting annihilated on it, who knows, your average cost is maybe 86 and you see this thing get trading at 81, 82 in a heartbeat. Scoop. I mean, what are you going to do? What's your algorithm going to tell you to do? Press your short or cover your short? I mean, and that's, you know, that's what you have when you have the short, high short interest. I don't know what the short interest in this one is, but you know, I'm sure there's someone out there short Hasbro and getting caught up in that ad rally. So you get that instant reaction here and you find buyers. We have not gone green yet. So that's what I'll look for. If you're looking for a target on the upside, still trading down in the session. What did we have? Yesterday's close in Hasbro was 88.89. So if you want to use that as a target, that could be a good level. 90.60 was the high from yesterday.
I mean, the whipsaw, you know, Edge is saying in the chat there, the whipsaw action in this market is incredible. So use that to your advantage. You know, when the stock's fallen $5-6, you're not shorting those stocks. Not in this market here, not in this market environment. You're looking for the turning point to potentially, potentially get in. I'm not saying trying to call the bottom, but I mean, just have a level, have your levels. Have a little longer term time frame. I mean, and even if you're not a trader, you're getting some great, obviously, individual investment opportunities, maybe in some of these stocks too. Maybe you like Grubhub and you're like, oh, I missed it back in December. Well, it gave you a second shot. The shot wasn't there for very long, but if you had your order sitting out there, you would have got filled. So, I mean, sitting your orders out there isn't that bad of an idea as a long-term investor. As a trader, I never do that because I don't want to get picked off. And obviously, I'm trading in a lot tighter markets. But I mean, as a long-term investor, you say, oh, I like Grubhub. I like the fundamentals. I like it under 70. Throw your order out there. You might get lucky. Yesterday,
Dennis,
might get lucky.
Do you ever do stuff for your portfolio in the pre-market or after hours? Or do you like to?
No. You know why? Well, there's two reasons. One, and you know, I can say I'm crazy for this, but my long-term stuff is in a Canadian broker account that doesn't even have pre-market after hours. So, you know, maybe that's a mistake. Okay. Maybe I should be. But I don't want to get, you know, caught up in all the whipsaw action, really, at the pre. Maybe I should. You know, maybe I should, you know, look into, you know, long-term investing when you get these crazy moves in the pre-market after hours. You know, it's probably not a bad idea, too. Do I trade this stuff? Absolutely. You know, do I get involved in, you know, for trades and all this stuff? Sure. I'm so busy trading pre-market after hours, I don't even have time to think about my long-term portfolio. So I just throw the orders out there in my long. If I like a stock long-term, I throw an order out there and it sits out there, and I'll put a GTC sometime. I'll sit out there for a month if I like that company's fundamentals long-term and I want to own it. And, you know, if I want to sell it, you know, for whatever reason, that's just come up too much, I'm not liking it, sometimes I set those orders out there long-term, and sometimes they just get you. The whipsaw action can get you in or out of a position. But, I mean, when you look at, you know, the, you know, on a day trading basis, you know, there's so many opportunities there, even there too. The whipsaw action is incredible.
Dennis,
it's algorithms just trading the headlines, misinterpreting, taking it one way, taking it the other. I mean, look at Expedia last night. They hit that down. Then it rallies $20. Now it's fallen $10 from the highs. There's action, man, in these earnings. It's high risk. So if you're trading these things, I always lower my size when you got that kind of movement. But there's opportunities in trading some of these earnings stocks for sure.
Dennis, if you'd like, I can just come over after the bill one day and just like have like a blowhorn and just like every periodically I just blow it. That's a reminder. Check your portfolio, your long term. Check your portfolio, your investment portfolio.
I don't want to do that though, because the more I check my long term portfolio, the more I trade and the more bad decisions I make. The long term's your long term. You shouldn't. I have a lot of ETFs in there. Like I own the SPY, I own the Qs. I own a lot of the Canadian ETFs. I've never sold one of those. Like, I've never sold any of those. I've just buy those, and those are there forever. It's the stock stuff that gets me sometimes where, okay, well, I bought Merck back when it was $30 and everybody hated it. And it's sitting here at 75. And it's like, okay, the valuation is not nearly as attractive. Now, when I bought it, it had a 6% dividend. The dividend's 2.89% because the stock has come up so much. At a certain point in time, it just doesn't fit my parameters of being cheap anymore. My long-term investing strategies have always been buy stocks when they're cheap. Kind of like Nick, you know, he writes puts on stocks that are cheap. So when the stocks, you know, have a relative valuation that are getting thrown out, when everybody's, you know, like nervous and throwing them all out, that's when I stick something in my long-term portfolio. I try not to look at it. In almost all cases, I'll tell you this too. In almost all cases, when I buy a stock in my long-term portfolio, I'm almost always down in it. I usually never have immediate gratification because I'm buying stocks when it's weak. But when I look at them 3 years later, I'm often very happy that I did that. So that's the difference, is I'm a contrarian investor, but a momentum trader. Yeah. So I would never buy a stock going straight down as a trade because I'm going with the flow. But I will do that in my long-term portfolio if I think the stock has value. I'm not buying stocks, you know, with PEs of 100. I'm buying stocks that I think, okay, this is a real company. I'm not buying Mittal. I'm not buying stocks on a decline that they have a PE of 8 or 9 if the fundamentals are declining. But if you can get a decent company at a reasonable valuation, I've always said like Google, those companies, I mean, you know, I believe they're going to continue to grow. I believe they're there. You know, yeah, it's trading 22 or 23 times. So it's a little more expensive, but you're getting so much growth there too that I feel like it's still good. Apple's one I've had for years. I mean, it's just, you know, from a PE perspective, it's cheap. Is it in decline? Is there problems, you know, with cell phones, you know, lasting too long and people not upgrading? Maybe. But I still think there's a lot of cash. I think I got a lot of other stuff cooking. I'll throw the pun in there. And I think, you know, long-term, I'm going to be okay with a long-term Apple position. So if you have long-term retirement account, I try not to trade it because if I'm looking at some of this stuff, it's going to scare me out. And you know what? I messed up in December. You know, Colin, I shouldn't have been selling a lot of those stocks that I probably sold. I didn't sell at the lows because I was selling back, you know, when I kind of called, you know, a little bit of a sell-off there on the second time around when I had the initial rally in early December. So I timed that well. But look, I timed it well. I'm still getting punished for it because I didn't get back in. So try not to trade your long-term portfolio. That's what I think.
Real quick here, I just Earl Cosby in the Google chat is asking about Cron, C-R-O-N. And, you know, this one, boom. I like the chart here. I can definitely give you an opinion here. You had to move up to 25.10. That was your all-time high. You had sellers come in the last few days and took it down to 18.72. I just figured the 50% retracement here, 2191, let's call $22. Let's call 22 resistance here. You take that out over the next 4 days, we will go back up and challenge that high at 2510. If, in fact, you can't clear 22, I look for us to come down and test that low at 1872. Longer term, there's another low at 1838. So if you're protecting profits long term here, I give it some wiggle room to under $18.
All right. It will be the end of our show today. So thanks to everyone who joined us both on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Thanks to both of our guests as well. If you missed any part of our show, you want to hear us again, catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Please remember all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Hope you all have had a good morning so far. What's up, Joel?
No, I just wanted to say one thing. Someone in the Google chat is asking about who won the mute bet. Dennis, are you still around there?
What bet?
I forgot all about that.
Which bet?
Oh, yeah. Was it yesterday or was it Wednesday?
What was the bet?
Tuesday.
The mute bet. Joel hasn't.
I think Joel won that
messed
one.
Messed up with the mute.
I think Joel won that one.
Oh, my goodness.
I totally forgot about that.
I totally forgot about that, too. Did he not make a mute mistake? No, Chad, help me out here. He must have made one.
No, he hasn't.
There wasn't one mistake here this week?
He hasn't. No, not since that bet was made.
He didn't make a mute bet. You know why? He probably has a writ and he wants to get that lunch for me. He will do everything in his power. He probably did? He probably never muted himself.
He
never muted himself. He just kept it going just to make sure he got it. He probably never touched the mute. Did you not touch the mute?
He wrote it on paper.
Did you see
my
sign? Did you
mute yourself this week at all? Did you not even touch the mute button?
I did not touch the mute button.
That's how he did it. He's so smart. He outwitted me on that one. So because he's always toggling the mute. So I'm like, oh, you're going to mess up and hit me. So he's just like, oh, I just won't touch the mute button this week. I get a free lunch from Dennis. He never touched the mute button. He outsmarted me on that one.
You would have signed for it, too. All right, okay. Wow. Okay.
And real quickly, Dennis.
That's the worst lunch.
I'm almost prepared to make a $27.90 versus $25.90 bet for a dinner because I'm feeling hot. But I'm going to wait to rally back up to $2,700, and then I'm going to go $2,800 versus $2,600. Folks, I just also want to add one thing. On Monday afternoon, if you enjoy the content that I give you from the show and the guests that we have on Monday, and I'll put the link in the chat on Monday, from 3 to 5, I'm going to be doing the same thing over there on at Real Life Trading on Jeremy's channel. But I will give you a link for that on Monday. Everyone, have a great trading day, a great trading session. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday morning.